PowerPoint there. So I wanted to have a discussion with the trustees around the diversifying sub-portfolio. It's a little bit of a different beast in that we're not defining it necessarily by asset classes, but by characteristics. And there's a wide variety of ways we can build this, all of which are going to require additional trustee education, but we want to get some initial buy-in today. So main goals of today's discussion really is I want to talk about what this does in FFP. I want to do set a reminder there. I want to lay out the goals that I have defined for the asset categorization, some potential ways we can build it out, and then get direction from you as the trustees of how far down this path would you like to go, and then we'll design education in April to meet your needs there. So, I mean, within the FFP model, the diversifying allocation is going to serve two main roles. One, it is a traditional building block approach of saying we want this to be a diversifying element relative to the growth allocation. Ed just showed you that equities are still the dominant risk in the portfolio. We're going to need some kind of hedge on that. This program serves that role. But importantly, this is what's going to allow us to do rebalancing very efficiently. If we're not able to buy cheap growth assets or sell out of expensive growth assets, we lose a lot of what we can do as long-term investors to add value. That's a huge driver. So we want this to be a liquid source of funds that during the next economic downturn, we can rebalance into the stock market when the liquid stock market is at lower valuations. So when I talk about the diversifying sub-portfolio, these are the three hallmarks I'm looking for, and I'm communicating out to the broader community here when we're looking at strategies. This needs to be different from stocks. It needs to have a low to negative correlation with, call it the S&P 500. It's got to behave differently. Importantly, it has to be an offset. I don't want to sell out of my diversifying portfolio at low valuations to buy stocks at low valuations. That's not a value add for us. We need this to be a bulwark against a stock market decline, then liquid enough to be able to sell and buy depressed valuations in the stock market. Second thing is we need to be able to get paid for holding this. I'm not building an insurance policy per se where we're expecting net outflows. This is not a tail risk hedge if you've heard that terminology. We're not buying an explicit insurance policy. We want something that's going to have a positive carry. So in a quote-unquote normal period, a period like the last couple of years, we want at least a positive rate of return, probably modest, but a positive rate of return associated with it. So it's not going to be a negative drag on our portfolio. And the way we framed it is a rate of return at least equal to inflation. That's a pretty low bar, but that's kind of how we're framing it. We're going to aim to do better than that, but there's our bare minimum. And lastly, like I talked about, we need to be able to draw this down during periods of market stress. So the liquidity profile is very important here, and specifically the liquidity profile during periods of equity market stress. We've all lived through 08 and 09 where we thought we had liquid assets and there was suddenly no buyer on the other side of those assets. That's not what we're looking for here. We can accept that kind of behavior in the growth portfolio where we don't expect to trade around it as much. But here, we need to be able to trade. We need to be able to liquidate a portion of this to do our rebalancing. So that asset class, or those three characteristics, don't exist in any asset class today. If we could find something that was an offset to the growth, offset to the S&P 500, that had a really nice expected rate of return and was incredibly liquid, that would be the portfolio. If that asset class existed, that is kind of the holy grail. So given that it doesn't exist, you know, kind of what conversation are we having? What are we looking for here? Looking for the unicorn that doesn't really exist? And mind you, this is the Bay Area, so it's the unicorn in the hoodie. I just want to make sure of that.
Yes, of course.
I missed that, by the way, in the packet. I missed the hoodie.
Side note, when you Google image search unicorn, this is the only thing that is not a My Little Pony knockoff. So for my own pride, I had to go with that. We're not really looking for the single asset class here. If we could find it, wonderful. I have zero confidence it exists. But what we can do is take the money ball approach. Can we build a portfolio of strategies that together in aggregate exhibit the three characteristics of what we're looking for there, the offset to the growth portfolio, the liquidity, and everything else. So apologies to the Giants fans in the room, but let's go A's. What we're going to look for here is a collection of strategies that are going to have varying degrees of these characteristics. Not everything is going to have the low correlation with stocks. Not everything is going to have the positive expected return, and not everything is going to have the liquidity. But we think we can put together a portfolio of strategies that does get us there. And yeah, you have zero chance of reading this on here, but this is just meant to, like, there is a broad range of strategies that have, this is a, on the bottom it's beta to growth exposure. Mm-hmm. So essentially correlation with the stock market. And on the left-hand side, it's return divided by standard deviation, so return efficiency, basically. So there's a broad variety of strategies. These are mostly hedge fund strategies with a couple of long-only strategies thrown in, but it's a pretty big universe out there that we have to choose from. And importantly, the bigger the universe we have, the more powerful and the more efficient we can get. But a subset of these will still get us there. So on that slide that you couldn't read, there's really three categorizations. And here's where we're going to start to need to get some direction for additional education. Strategies are going to fall into what you're used to in terms of a long-only investment-oriented strategy. Is that treasuries, mortgages, asset-based lending? These are going to be fixed income instruments that just simply behave differently in a normal, historically have behaved differently than the equity markets. Then you're going to have what's I would categorize as investments plus a strong trading element. And that would be things along the lines of equity long short, which is probably not necessarily appropriate here, but risk parity, commodity trading advisors, things of this nature. There is a long only element and there's a heavy trading element. And oftentimes there's going to be leverage and shorting in here as well. But call it a step in the trading mentality, but still contained within a box. It's still going to have elements that you recognize as a long-only investment. It's just going to be coupled with additional trading mentality. And then all the way out, it's going to be the hedge funds, the dreaded H word. I've had a conversation with probably a lot of you individually, but not collectively as a board, saying, I'm not a proponent of building out a hedge fund allocation. To me, that is not descriptive of what something does for us. However, when a hedge fund structure is the most efficient way of implementing the three goals we've outlined, I'm more than happy to explore it. The reason we've categorized it out here separately is, to the extent we use even a single hedge fund, there are some operational considerations to take a look at there. They're a different beast. They require a different type of review, a different type of custody, a different type of engagement, and we just need to be aware of that.
And you were trying to get away from that term hedge fund, asset something, I forget to call it. But is there to go along with just because of the reputation, or is there actually a...
It's a branding problem. No, it's a branding problem. I think not every hedge fund hedges anything, per se. You have return-seeking hedge funds, so there's no... I mean, I think hedge funds in isolation, if you knew nothing about hedge funds, you would say, okay, it's got to be offsetting something. And typically, I think historically, that was offsetting stock market exposure. And then you went to terminology like absolute return. We just want to perform regardless of what's going on in the economy. So it's definitely an imperfect terminology, but we're going to say the hedge fund label up here doesn't do anything for us. But things that have been historically labeled hedge funds might be individual strategies we could explore here. They might offer the offset to the S&P 500 plus liquidity, or they might offer an offset to the S&P 500 plus a positive rate of carry, but with limited liquidity. And can we kind of start to bundle those together into a matrix that makes sense for us in aggregate? So, clearly we know hedge funds are a dirty word in our business today.
To call it a shrub fund instead.
Shrub, hedgerow.
Hey, Tim.
Yes.
How did, in terms of the strategy objective, the low to negative correlation with liquid growth assets, expected return to normal markets, and high degree of liquidity. I didn't understand how mortgages fit. I see they're in the long side of this, but I didn't understand mortgages and asset-based lending as being two strategies or approaches that met maybe any of the three.
Depending on the way you implement these, they would certainly have the positive expected rate of return. The liquidity is probably the one that's a little bit more suspect on that. You don't necessarily have the mark on the other side of all of these. But they do tend to behave differently than S&P 500. Are they as lowly correlated as other strategies? No.
I was just thinking, when I read this after I got the packet, my flip answer when I looked at the three factors was, well, wouldn't you do treasuries? I hadn't gotten to that page yet,
yeah.
but it seemed to me that met the three food groups.
No, I mean, treasuries are certainly an effective tool, just virtually no rate of return no real rate of return associated with them today.
Right. Great. They got great liquidity, though.
Great liquidity. Historically, they've been a good offset to the stock market. But, you know, after inflation, you're looking at, I mean, Ed, what's the capital market assumption? Zero or negative on treasuries? Yeah.
So what's of the needs in this strategy, isn't liquidity the top need?
I would say correlation is top need. The reality is we need all three. The liquidity is pretty critical. If we can't use it, it's not really working as hard for us. The correlation is the primary benefit from an asset allocation perspective. That's what the model is looking to say, do I get better aggregate portfolio efficiency by having something that behaves differently than the stock market? So that's when Ed comes back in with the asset allocation, the correlation benefit is primary there. In terms of an operational usage of this under FFP, you're right, liquidity heightens to number one there.
I'm also thinking these are everything other than the obvious things like treasuries are actively managed strategies, right? So you've got all of the load that comes with that.
Yes.
Right, that you have to pay for.
Yeah, there is no passive option here. These are all going to be finely tuned to offset specific risks that we have in our growth portfolio. This is probably where we're not going to hit. This is not going to be a big building block. This is going to be a collection of customized strategies. So when we start to talk about the range of prospective allocations, I mean, I stole a couple slides here from Verus. And technically, they're credited in the bottom, so I guess it's not stealing. But how they think about some of the real asset space and its behaviors, GDP sensitivity, inflation sensitivity, income, return enhancing, risk reducing, liquidity. So we've got a large selection we can work off of in the real asset space. That's a good starting point for us. And then when we go on to the hedge funds, let me just pause there.
So, what is listed infrastructure?
Publicly listed infrastructure. So a stock whose primary asset behind it is a piece of infrastructure. Port operators would be an example. Toll road operators, things of that nature. So in this space, I think this is going to be the area what's a little bit more familiar to the trustees. There's not the exotic trading strategies here. This is basic blocking and tackling on the long only. And I want to make the important point that if the board direction is don't go so far afield as to include the heavy trading strategies, we can work off this list. It's not as large of a universe. It's not as robust of a universe. But we can work off this list to accomplish programmatic goals. If you start to say you're going to expand the opportunity set a bit, then we move on to trading in a box, leverage in a box, or onto some of the select hedge fund strategies and start to explore what's available to us there. And importantly, right now, we need to be able to design your next educational session, so that's where we need the direction. How far down this path from long-only investments to full-on trading strategies do you want to go at this point in time? So I touched on the implementation considerations earlier, but to the extent we do the real asset, long-only investment side, this is basic for us. There's no additional infrastructure we need. There's no additional external advice we need. We have the resources, capabilities, and experience to implement that today. To the extent we start going down the path of some of the trading strategies, specifically if we start going down the path of the CTA approaches or the risk parity approaches, those are still relatively straightforward. That's call it a light level of education needed for the trustees to talk about how leverage and shorting is handled, how the risk is monitored, mitigated inside those strategies. And you imagine if we go to hedge funds, and then we start to talk about how do we hold these, who trades them, what's the governance structure around these, do we do fund of funds, do we do a fund of one, do we do direct? There's a lot more iterations there. So it's kind of how far down the rabbit hole do we want to go today? But importantly, it's that last point that's really the reason we're having this conversation, is the larger the opportunity set, the greater the chances of building the most efficient portfolio for Cicero we have. But we got to trade that off against the governance and oversight considerations. So what I need from the trustees today is some feedback, some guidance on what you would like to get educated on in April. Do you just want to focus on long-only strategies that might work for us here? Do you want to expand that to the risk parity strategies, the CTA strategies, things of that nature? Or do you want to start talking about what would it take to even begin to implement some of our strategies via hedge funds? And that's where I really just want to elicit that feedback from the trustees today.
How much time are we spending? Are you looking at another 2 days? I'll say.
No. Basically, this is guidance back to Verus. Verus can bring their manager research capabilities to bear on this and come in and talk about, you know, what are the considerations here? What do the managers look like? How do we get comfortable with leverage trading? How do we monitor these? What are the risk factors to be aware of? That sort of thing. It'd be a board meeting. It's just at the April board meeting, at the second April board meeting. Yeah.
So I'm, from where I sit, I'm in, you know, I just feel like I'm in no position to judge limiting the options. So I guess my vote would be, I'd like to know more about all three. I mean, I understand the long only option the best, obviously, but on the other two bullets, I'd want to know more about them, particularly the cost piece and the risk piece.
Yep.
And it may be with respect to the third bullet, at some point the level of complication or sophistication may be something that is difficult to take on, either from having everybody be in the same plane at the same time on understanding everything, because, you know, the input out is only going to be as good as what came in.
Yep. Right?
So that would be, to me, the hesitation in the more esoteric or sophisticated strategy would be the built-in, you know, limitations that we're not all experts and we're not at certain levels. Certainly, I'm the first to admit it.
Yeah.
So I just want to make sure that it's well within the comprehension and capability of all of us, you know, in terms of the strategy, particularly the more active it is or the more involved we are, then it's in favor of needing to understand it.
We're definitely trading off how easy is it to understand versus how powerful is it in terms of a risk offset. And this is the area, these are the trade-offs that boards have got to make always here.
Right.
Because I could barbell that out to either end. That's not necessarily an appropriate position for this board. You've got to be comfortable with the way it's implemented. You've got to be comfortable with what's in it. You've got to be comfortable with the level of transparency. And, you know, we just kind of, before we start going down the educational path, we wanted to get that guidance.
Well, but for me, there's some preliminary education, I guess, yep. is what I'm saying, is I need to know more about particularly those bullets 2 and 3 for me to make a more informed
choice. So you, okay.
So you're asking for feedback. That's my feedback.
Yeah, and I think part of this, too, is that we wanted direction from the board on if you're just completely adverse to even considering hedge funds or certain pieces of this, we wanted to know that before we spend, you know, additional energy and input into preparing education on that. And I will say on the hedge funds side, you've seen, I'm sure many of you have read, a number of plans have been getting out of the hedge fund space, and for different reasons, for different reasons. And in some cases, they just really didn't make sense for the certain plans that they were in. So obviously they exited. You know, I'm not a huge advocate for us having a large part of our portfolio in this in any way, and I don't think that Tim's, and, you know, he's kind of on the same page with that. But I do think that when it comes to taking a look at the opportunities that are out there for Sisera, that it's a worthwhile exercise. And, you know, obviously when you hear hedge funds, and yeah, a lot of folks have started not calling themselves hedge funds because they know, you know, there's some dirty words because, you know, there are fee considerations or additional operational considerations. Some of them have longer lockup periods, which goes against our the liquidity that we would want with this. But there are some that don't have, you know, some of those issues as much. And so it's just, I think that that's what we're wanting from the board is some direction on, you know, we're not completely closed off to this, or yes, we are. And so, you know.
Yeah, but on the very point of hedge funds, we've already had the discussion here today that, you know, different people understand a hedge fund to be different things, mm-hmm. simply because the term has been so widely used and misused or misunderstood.
Yeah.
That, you know, just even the popular media, we may not even know what we're talking about. Right? So that's why I'm saying I think fleshing it out a little more in terms of the choice set before we can get into the more sophisticated discussion of the nuances of the risks and the rewards of each mm-hmm. is probably useful without taxing our resources.
Yeah. And, okay. I mean, candidly, what we're looking for is there a hard no or are there question marks? If there's question marks, we'll do the education. If there's a hard no, we're just going to have to define the education differently. And so if there's not a hard no, I think we've got our direction.
Do we have any hard no?
Trustee, have a hard no here.
No. Do you have you got a comment? Or?
Yeah, I've got a comment and a question. So for me, my opinion on this kind of goes back to the last bullet point in your previous slide, which is we should all want to expand the universe of strategies and increase the likelihood of crafting an efficient, diversifying sub-portfolio. So efficient, diversifying sub-portfolio, that's my goal, and I would love to see what ideas you have mm-hmm. and how far we can take that going forward. But I also did have a question of, so we go down that path. What does this really look like? Does this look like we hire some more staff people internally to manage this part of the portfolio, or does this look like us going out and hiring a manager who would then put together an efficient diversifying portfolio?
I think with the mm-hmm. investment staff that the board has approved, we don't need any additional people. That staff, when I get it built out, is perfectly capable of overseeing this program. Mm-hmm. I suspect we are going to need some additional external assistance in building this, whether that is a fund-to-fund, a fund-to-one, a specialist consultant, and there's where there's a little bit of a question mark of what governance model do you go down. But I mean, we also need to keep in mind that we're talking 12% of the portfolio, and the reason we're having, I mean, Jerry, to your point on the asset allocation, the reason we did a first reading, then education, and then a final is based upon the feedback from the board, Ed's going to model out the risk diversifying element a little bit differently. So there's a kind of a his view of the world in there now, and if the board's view of the world of risk diversifying is materially different, he needs to build that into the capital market assumptions before the board adopts a final asset allocation. But we are talking 12% of the fund. It's currently modeled out as 3% treasuries, 4% hedge funds, 5% risk parity. So, I mean, and if the board's view of the world is materially different than that after we get through April and May, then we'll have to have to build that in. But wanted to be able to have that conversation. So, relatively modest portion of the overall program, but we need it to be a pretty hard-hitting portion of the overall program.
David's comments made me think of something, headline risk. Overwhelmingly on hedge funds, when the newspapers and others are writing about them, that 2 and 20, or now in some cases you see 3 and 20, and I mean, just huge potential fees. Have you given any thought to that being feasible? By the way, I'm very supportive of what you're describing, personally. Yeah. But there is that component that we are effectively spending too much of our members' money on fees for particularly a hedge fund that doesn't do well, and we're still ending up paying them 3%. You can see from earlier presentations today we're running on average about 50 basis points on a on fees, about half of 1%. So suddenly 3% on a on a losing investment is fairly high profile, or could be.
Couple of thoughts on that. I think, you know, the fact that we're kind of coming, we're exploring this space at a relatively contrarian point in the hedge fund cycle. They have passed their peak. They are under fee pressure. They are a dirty word in aggregate. So I think the exclusivity factor associated with hedge funds broadly is past us. There are still certainly going to be individual hedge fund strategies that have pricing power and have a queue and, you know, are going to be able to charge what they want. But I think that that basket approach of the entire industry is super expensive, that is fading. So we're going to come in with some pricing power on our side of the equation. headline risk on any individual strategy that goes away from simple long-only holdings of low volatility strategies is going to be higher. We're going to have headline risk across our portfolio, and you're right, some of these hedge fund strategies, because they're going to be more trading heavy, there's just more velocity of decisions going through there. That's the reality of it, and the board has got to get some education around that. But I think in terms of where I've seen plans kind of go down the wrong path, or from my point of view, go down the wrong path with hedge funds is when they said, we're going to recharacterize hedge funds as absolute return, and it's going to be a really big chunk of our portfolio, and it just needs to work all the time, no matter what. And when, you know, they thought they had return-seeking hedge funds and they had risk-mitigating hedge funds or vice versa, that's where I've seen there be kind of a disconnect between what the governing body saw as this is, just works no matter what, versus how it was implemented and say, you know, stock market's up 30% and my hedge fund portfolio is up, you know, 5%. Well, that's an awful result if you expected it to be an equity replacement. It's a wonderful result if you said, I just need this to be different and I don't care about participating in the upside. I just need to mitigate the downside. So I think the fact that we're not going into this saying, let's build a hedge fund program. We're going into this saying, when and if a hedge fund strategy fulfills the three goals we've outlined, we'll pursue it. As the three goals we've outlined now become our measures of success. Not absolute return, but return within the context of how it's offsetting other risks in our portfolio. And you know, I think importantly, as we get towards the second half of this year and the FFP gets a little bit more fleshed out, you're going to see feedback from my staff on, let's do a quick review on what liquidity does for us and are we on track. Let's do a quick review on what does growth do for us and are we on track. And then this one is going to be a big piece of that. This, as I said, it's got to, it's small. It's 12% of the overall fund, so it's got to work really, really hard to offset that big 63% allocation or 61% allocation, whatever we moved it to, allocation and growth. But we're going to start to have more individualized conversations that aren't necessarily return-centric conversations. They're going to be functional-centric conversations about each one of these sub-portfolios.
And I think the fees is obviously a huge hurdle in getting over to see that, oh, these are things that we should be getting into. And I think that in that case, you know, we have to see that there's, you know, we're getting enough negative correlation to equities that it makes sense for us to do something like that. And looking at, and then also looking at the percent of that, like, oh, if we're only going to have $100 million in there, it's not going to move the needle much, but we're going to be spending a lot of time on it. Does that make sense too?
Right.
So I think part of it is seeing what really makes sense for us with all of those considerations in play. So,
are we going to even be labeling it a hedge fund? Will that even come up anywhere? Are you going to, you know, I'm going at, not that we're trying to hide anything, but you're saying you're taking parts of what are traditional hedge funds and saying we're going to invest in that and that?
No, I mean, we're going to label it by what it is.
Right.
So if it is a commodity trading advisor, it'll be labeled CTA. If it's going to be, Ed, help me out here, some of the strategy.
Global macro.
Global macro. I mean, it's, we're going to call it, if there's nothing else that we've done over the past couple of years, it's been to, you know, label things by what they do. It just,
right.
Don't overcomplicate it.
Right.
Yeah, so.
And a lot of the hedge fund managers have adopted the same approach.
Yeah.
Right. Don't consider us a hedge fund manager. Consider us a, okay, you know, there's a little bit of gamesmanship in that for sure. A little bit of marketing spin, but
yep.
more appropriately they're recognizing and they want to be categorized as this kind of strategy for what they try to do.
Yep.
Yeah, those are NTAs, non-transparent approaches. We use acronyms.
I mean, basically, if it doesn't do something for us on a net a fee basis, it's not going to be in the portfolio.
Right. Yeah. You can use that, Ed.
All right. So I think if there's any other questions, I'm happy to answer them, but I think we've got the direction we need at this point.
Yeah, I agree with Scott, too.
Great.
Thank you.
We're open-minded, Tim. We just have a lot of specific questions and concerns.
Beautiful. Love it.
You have the guidance you need.
I have the guidance I need.
Thank you.